I've studied this side of our community development leadership for quite a while. I've been on the board at Black Rose for 10 years, immediate past chairman of the board of NCSF. I'm on the board of LLC, on a board of this, that, and the other fucking thing. Leadership is something that is significant to me. You know, how do you make organizations function? And how do you make them really work so that we can have time? We're here to talk about leadership. It's a very important topic. Groups don't just happen. Organizations don't just happen. Events don't just happen. Somebody's got to take the initiative and make shit happen. And you can't do it yourself. You got to work with other people. And you got to know what you got to do and where we're going to go. And all these things, we live in a world that's made up of volunteers. We don't have the kind of money in our community really yet to hire professional managers for our events. You got to, as the person in charge, or the person who winds up in charge, you've got to come up with a way to get all the cats herded together and moving toward a common goal. And that's leadership. How many of you know groups or aware of groups that have failed over the years? I mean, yeah, right, but universally. I dare say that that was a failure in leadership as much as it was probably anything else. Whoever was in charge, or thought they were in charge, perhaps they confused, and I'm going to be broadly general here, they confused being in charge with being a leader and being bossy. Leader is not a synonym for an asshole. And in fact, sometimes you got to be a bit of an ass. You got to ruffle some feathers once in a while. But on the other hand, that can't be your primary way of getting things done, or you'll never get anything done. People will not line up behind you. In Africa, I've spent a lot of time in Africa over the years, a great deal, and they run elections a little bit differently than we see here in the United States. They put a guy's picture up on a post. They have all the candidates for office. And you line up behind them. And they count how many people are lined up. And that's how many votes that village for each candidate. And I think that that's actually a very good metaphor for how leadership works. Because who are you willing to line up behind? Or how are you going to get the people to line up behind you? Because they don't have to. They could go line up behind somebody else who they think is taking them in the direction they want to go. Well, in thinking about this several different ways, some years ago, I was looking at the question really of, well, okay, what things must a leader have? What are the most important attributes that absolutely, positively, you've got to have in order to function? The first way I'm going to express this is in the context of what your organization requires of you. There are four things you absolutely, positively got to do or you will fail. There's no doubt in my mind. Number one, you got to be able to identify requirements. What's needed? Whether it's meetings, newsletters, parties, whatever, those are requirements for an S&M club or a leather club. Those are things that have to happen because that's why the people are there. They came because they want these things. And if you can't identify that that's why they're there and what things that they will need, they will not line up behind you. You've got to ascertain, what do my people want? What do they need? You will also need to take and identify meeting requirements regarding policy and action for current issues. You need to know when not to act, too. I get a little annoyed sometimes in our community. I hate the word activist. We seem to feel sometimes, some of our folks seem to feel, that my God, we're constantly under attack, one thing and another, and for places when you look at the issue, that no one's attacking us. Some of our people fail to follow the fucking law, you know, and they get caught by the people whom we pay to do that. That's hardly reason to go protest City Hall and whatnot. I mean, those best people want. There's a time to act. There's a time not to act. There are policies that need to be made, and policy is important. There's crisis response. Crisis happens. And we need to take and identify, when do we have a crisis? And what should we do about it? What is that immediate requirement? How do we make this thing stop and bring it to a halt? If you cannot identify the immediate requirements, immediate requirement in that it must happen right now as a response to something else, Or it must happen every Tuesday, because we got to have a meeting. It's Tuesday, and it will damn well be a meeting. Because that's what our people expect of us. So, number one important thing, you've got to be able to identify requirements of a variety of types in order to be an effective leader. What's necessary now? Second thing, you have to provide. When, in days gone by, when a large landowner felt that, in the American history, the Civil War and in the Revolutionary War, to raise a company or raise a battalion, that was often done by some large landowner, literally on the back of a wagon, driving through a town, beat a drum to attract attention, proclaiming what he wanted to do, and promising, if you follow me, I will provide you, beans and bacon and bullets and a place to sleep and so forth. People listened to this individual and they made a judgment. Yes, the cause is worthy, and yes, I believe this person will in fact provide. They'll provide worthy leadership, they'll provide the tools and the sustenance needed to carry out whatever campaign is in the offing. And they follow. And that's how colonels became regimental commanders, because people would line up behind them because they knew that they would provide. Now, you've got to take and provide. A leader who says, too hard, well, I don't have anybody for Tuesday night, fuck it. Somebody else should have done this. No, wrong. Wrong. It's Tuesday. There should be a meeting tonight. By God, there will be one tonight. I had this problem just a few weeks ago. I was going to be a panelist for somebody else's panel at Black Rose meeting. I called the individual that morning and I said, what is it we're going to do? I haven't heard from you. I knew the general subject, but I don't like walking into any kind of a meeting where I'm supposed to be part of the entertainment and not have some idea of what we're going to do. I do not like to entertain the audience with my fumbling and tap dancing. I would much rather have something of substance that's thought out to say. And so the individual in question told me, well, what do you mean? That's tonight? And I said, yeah, that's tonight. Well, I never committed to do it. And I said, yeah, actually, yes, you did, because you called me and asked me to be on the panel. I guess you actually did have an intent to do this. And I said, it's been published for months on the website, and it went out yesterday on the BR members advisory thing, the activities for the week. And I said, didn't give me this crap that you didn't know about it. And that's what I got, was crap. So she was going to call me back later. 4 o'clock that afternoon, that's supposed to happen at 8 o'clock that night. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, she calls me up and she says, well, I just can't do it. I'm not prepared. I just can't do it. And so I said, well, who else is supposed to be on the panel? Well, the bottom line is she hadn't taken and found anybody to do anything. And now faced with the necessity to provide, her solution was to throw up her hand and say, too fucking hard, I don't want to do it, screw it. Well, as I pointed out to her, I said, today is Tuesday. At 8 o'clock, there will be a meeting. You obligated yourself. What are you going to do? Bottom line, flick. So, I put together an outline, and I went, and they delivered the meeting. Instead of a panel discussion, it became a lecture. And we relied a little bit more than I normally do on the audience participation, because there was only so many hours to get ready. That is what I mean by provide. There is no, well, we're just not going to do it because something happened. That's just not how it works. If you're going to be a leader, or you aspire to be a leader, then there is no, well, it's just too hard. You have got to get out and you've got to make it happen. The leader has to provide. That's what the people expect of you. In my experience within the SM community, they don't really give a shit what you do, as long as you make it happen. Make the meetings happen, make the parties happen. Don't embarrass us, and we'll leave you alone. When they elect you, that's what they're doing. You know, much as anything else, they're saying, we trust that you will provide those things that we expect. You do so, and you have our backing. You don't, you're out. Well, unfortunately, all too often they don't throw the rascals out, but we'll get to that in a bit. Your job is to convert vision into reality. It's really easy to say, oh, we should do this, and we must do that, but then you've got to actually make it happen. You've got to make the vision, make the concept into reality. You've got to make it occur. And something I'm going to say over and over again, deeds, not words, are what counts. We, in our community, we are full of babble. We got lots of people that talk a great fucking game, but they don't do jack shit. You're not a leader if that's how you act. You've got to actually make it happen. When you were evaluating the things that yourself as a leader, one good way of doing that is look at what's the proportion of the good ideas that you had that you brought into fruition. You know, not just threw out for the community to handle. It doesn't happen. Inspire. An effective leader has got to be able to inspire. You can't do it all yourself. You're negligent if you try. You must act in a manner that encourages others to work toward a common goal. We see a number of groups in our community that are centered around a single individual. I can think of several of them. They're characterized, I think, a couple of ways. Number one, in general, short-lived. Number two, in general, small. They never get to grow. Why can't they grow? Because one person can't do. There's a very, very serious limit on how much one person could possibly do. And you cannot grow an organization by the efforts of one person. It doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. So that doesn't work. You have to inspire others, empower them, and all the rest of this good stuff for an organization to grow. Black Rose started out as a PEP group. We were PEP DC. We were Nancy Miller's second group. Nancy is the embodiment of this notion of cold fusion. Nancy is this absolutely unbelievable ball of energy encompassed by skin. She put out more energy than any other single individual probably I've ever met. Much of it was not well directed, but she tried really hard. She failed. And PEP DC was going to fail. Till some of us said, no. This is worthy. We need to keep this. We don't let this fall. So we pointed her elsewhere. Because all power, everything was centralized in one person. She wasn't willing to share. She wasn't willing to take a delegate. And she couldn't inspire. And the group would have failed, as many of the PEP groups failed. And that's a model problem. In the case, a single person-centric model. You can't do that. It won't work for the long haul. You've got to learn how to inspire others. Let me tell you, last fall, how many of you are on SMAC? Anybody here at SMAC? Okay, there's a bunch of you that may well remember the huge shit that flowed around last fall. Let me tell you how damn difficult it was being the leader, the co-chair for this event, to keep the troops together. When we were getting ripped up every day by various forces, that was doggone difficult to keep everybody head up, and including my own, and focus, look, we are right, we're doing this right, fuck them. You know, we're going to make this happen. That was not easy to do. That was, I don't know how inspiring I was, but we're here today. And it apparently worked. But that is a really important thing that you've got to take and learn how to do. How to get other people to follow me and help me to provide. Lastly, a vision for the future. Where is your group or community going? How will you get there? And what specific actions will be required to make that happen? People will go a really long way on hope. If they don't have hope for the future, and a sense that things are going to get better and be brighter or whatever, They will look for that elsewhere. Your organization, you as an organizational leader, you have got to take and have a vision for where are we going? Why is this the right path? Why is this the place to be? Why will we better meet your needs, your desires, your whatever in the future? And then, how are we going to do it? Because you can't sell pie in the sky all by itself for very long and say, boy, apple pie is really, really, really good to eat without describing at some point how you're going to get them apple pies. But you've got to take and have the vision for what's the future going to be, and it has to be a vision that appeals to the church. And you've got to be able to articulate it and articulate how are we going to get there. Because if you could do that and show the progress towards this, the people will stay and they will help you achieve that. But if you cannot articulate where you're going as a group, then your group is doomed to stagnation. And people will leave because they'll go line up under somebody else's picture who is offering a better vision of the future. So you need to do four things as a leader. Absolutely, positively, you have to do these things. You've got to be able to identify what's necessary now, what has to be done now, and get it done. You have to provide those things that are necessary and expected. You have to make them happen, no matter whether it hurts or it doesn't. No matter if you don't feel good, you would rather not be here today. You've got to be here. You've got to suck it up. You've got to do it. You have to make it happen, whether you're doing it yourself or not. You got to make it happen. Every damn time it's supposed to happen, it's got to be there. You have to inspire to get others to help you make it happen. And you got to have a vision of where we're going. Those four things are absolutely necessary. And we can look back in history at many great leaders and many great despots, because the differences are not so great, and look at why did people line up behind them, and why, from sometimes, you know, horrid conditions, did they were able to pull their people together and mold them into an efficient organization and move forward rapidly. You'll see these characteristics stand right out. Now what about if you're looking at yourself? What things would characterize personally an effective leader, and characteristics that you need to cultivate and develop in yourself? And I wrote this up as sort of like a job description. I didn't know whether this is the best way to write it up or not, but I was looking to do something a little different, so I did it this way. Has vision. The leader's got to have vision. You got to be able to see the big picture. You got to understand why things are happening and understand the role of individuals, your group, and the community, and how these things interact. One of the things we find at Black Rose, it takes 3 years to make a good board member. The first year, they don't know what the fuck to do. The first year, they do stuff largely because they've come to one of us that's been around a long time, and they say, what am I supposed to do? And we say, okay, and you will handle the newsletter, and you will, you know, you will do this, and you will do that. And the first year is spent with a lot of frustration because they really don't know how to do things really well. And they're a little shy on inspiring and some other stuff. By the second year, they've got their speed, and they're really productive. And by the third year, they've actually figured out how to do this without killing themselves. And they're beginning to enjoy being on the board. Now, some people get right up to speed very quickly, but most don't. And we see one of the things that I see in that first year with people is business of vision. They don't understand the role of the individual club member relative to the club itself, and they haven't got a clue where the club sits in regard to community. Because from the standpoint of an individual, community does not have a lot of meaning. What does the community do for the individual? Nothing. Not directly. And they're damn men. Community is some sort of ethereal thing. Now, this is, I think, more the case with your BDSM education groups than with your MCs. I believe that there's a difference. There's a lot more. For example, with Black Rose, many of our members have never been to a leather event anywhere outside of Washington. That's not why they joined Black Rose. They joined Black Rose to learn how to swing a whip. You know, and they joined Black Rose to find someone to swing the whip at. And that's why they were there, and if that's met, then that's really all that they want. So community does not have a big play. They're not traveling to contests. So we do maybe a little more of that now than we used to. I think with some of the with the MCs, we see more of that, more traveling to other people's events, going to the contests and whatnot. And so the average individual member perhaps has a more quickly develops a sense of community. But you, as the leader, have to have vision, and you have to understand where things fit and how things work, as I said, and why they're happening. It's really important. It provides effective direction. If you're going to give an order, damn well better be the right order. You have to identify what is most important to accomplish. And sometimes that means telling somebody that now is not the right time for their good idea. If you take a shotgun approach to life or to organizational management, you're not going to get anywhere. Yeah, you've got little data points up on a board somewhere, but you don't have building blocks. You've got to take and build foundations and then build on them. Otherwise, things will crumble. We've got to identify what is important to accomplish first. We have to make sure that everyone understands the plan, because remember, we got this vision back here, and now we're going to provide the direction to get there. So we have to have a plan, and everyone needs to be very aware of that plan. Now, there is a tendency on the part of people who are not very good leaders to not share their plan, either because they think that's the way to maintain control. If nobody knows the whole plan but me, then I'm necessary. That's bad. Because people will walk away because it looks like a clusterfuck. They can't see that there's a good plan. Or people will be reluctant to share their plan because they don't have confidence in it. And they don't want someone else to look at their plan critically. They don't want to be judged. Well, that's nonsense. Because you're judged every single day, you know, by all sorts of people. We're always being judged. And sometimes we're going to be judged harshly, usually when we screw up. A leader's got to be prepared to accept the fact that you're going to make mistakes. And when you do, you own up to it. And generally speaking, if you generally do a good job, people are very forgiving. But you got to be willing to do it, and you got to take and lay out your plan. And if everybody looks at you and says, that is the dumbest thing I have ever seen, well then, either you stick to your guns and explain again why you think it's right, or you accept that maybe you aren't right. But you got to put your plan out. And everyone's got to understand it. Because then they understand the piece that they are assigned to do. Or they can pick a piece they want to do. But whatever is being done is in furtherance of the plan. That's really important. A lot of people in the community have projects they want to do. Well, I'm not opposed to that. But a project you want to do does not necessarily mean it moves the organization forward. It may actually divert resources and focus away from the direction that the organization is trying to go in. It may not be the right time for your project. So we got to take and provide appropriate direction. We need to organize individuals to accomplish specific objectives. This does not mean that we're going to micromanage everybody. When we put together the team for this event, I was not interested in having a big, huge meeting and having people decide what they were going to do. I mean, that may not sound very inclusive, but I guess I'm not that kind of guy. I don't make any apologies for that. What I did was I found people who I thought could do specific jobs well, and then told them to find helpers that they could work with. Ed and I, two co-chairs for this, We didn't identify every person on the team and assign them to their spots. We picked six principal functional managers because we felt they could do the job. Let them and gave them the direction. You know, here's how we're going to do it. Here's where we're going. Guys, move the ball that way. And that's how this event happened. And it worked really, really, really well. I mean, some things we actually could have done better. But we organized our team in a very simple, very straightforward manner, and we got where we were going with, frankly, a minimum of meetings and a minimum of fuss. A lot of email. But otherwise, I think very, very well. Maintain individual and group focus. Every once in a while, you got to take somebody by the hand and walk them around the building and say, you know, you're doing a wonderful job. You're working your ass off, but you're going in the wrong direction. That's a very interesting thing you're doing, but now is not the right time to do it. This is what you're supposed to be doing. Here's what we're supposed to be doing. Now, the way I did it for this event was back in the spring, actually the summer. For each functional area, I wrote up a direction. Where are you supposed to go? For the programming people, for example, I laid out the six tracks or seven tracks that you've seen referenced. I defined the tracks and I gave them examples of titles that might fit within those tracks so they knew what I meant. And I said, do something that looks like this. Make this happen. And I want to do posters. We had to explain to everybody what a poster was and why that would be a good idea. And for the registration, we said, when people show up, you know, we'll hand them an envelope that's got everything in it, and we don't want long lines at registration. And make this happen. We did that for each functional area. What is it you're supposed to do? And then let them run with it. And this worked great. It helped maintain their focus. It gave them guidance as to where we wanted them to go and what was their role within the organization. Nobody at any time had a doubt as to who they worked for and what they were supposed to be doing. It worked very, very well. Along the way, we had one or two people that did kind of get astray, but that wasn't difficult. That was just go up to them and talk to them and say, what are you doing? You seem to be off on your own here. This is not helping the group, and you need to be over here. And just changing jobs, because they just didn't like what they were assigned to do. We got another job. You need to use persuasion and authority to motivate and maintain discipline. There's a very big difference between formal authority and earned authority. Formal authority is that occurs to you or accrues to you as a result of some position. You are elected the president. Okay, what does the president of a club get to do? Sign papers. write checks. Yeah, sign checks, sign papers, put your ass on the line formally, yes. However, because you're the president of the club, you got Bob right here, because you're the president of the club, does that mean that people will do what you tell them to do merely because you tell them to do it? Yeah, exactly. You have the authority, but what you don't have is the mechanism to force someone to do. That is earned authority. As president, you have regulated authority. No one has to follow you. How do you get people to do what you want them to do? Well, because they line up behind your picture. And they'll take direction from you because they believe that you will lead them in the right place. Or they respect you because of other things they've seen you do, or they respect you for whatever reason, or they really want to get laid and they figure that they can suck up to you. You know, and you know, this will be an opportunity that happens too. It doesn't happen to me very often, but I live at home. Authority does not flow from a title. Authority flows from the individuals that invest you with the authority to lead them. That's where it really comes from, and you need to remember that. That it is the individuals that give you the authority to lead them. And people who run around saying, well, I am the co-chair, and I am the this, and I am the that, are pretty generally ignored. I don't have to say things like that. At Blackburn, I don't ever have to say, well, I'm the goddamn chairman of the board, and this is how we're going to do it. You know, that wouldn't work very well. you know, it's, guys, this is what I think we ought to do. Here's why I think we ought to do it. And I really suggest we take this course. And it usually happens. And that is because they have invested their confidence in me. And that's how you get it done. You need to be able to, under that same heading, cause others to see, understand, and believe the vision. You need to communicate clearly and with impact. When you are laying out the what is it we're going to do and the why are we going to do it, you've got to express that very clearly, which is why I wrote out for everybody. This is what your section's going to do. This is your goal. This is your piece of the pie. And impact in this context was, I'm not going to tell you how to do it beyond this. You guys are smart guys. That's why we picked you. Now go make it happen. You know, tell them, call me when it's not going so well. And that worked pretty well. You have to project self-confidence, even when you may have personal doubt. Things can be very difficult. And it can be very hard to project self-confidence. Last fall was very damn difficult for me to project self-confidence, I want to tell you. We were getting raked online about some of the budget politics stuff. It was very difficult to be self-confident. It really was very, very damn difficult. But I had to do my best to not allow that to become infectious within the team, because that would have destroyed it. And to keep that focus and to keep that self-confidence was important. And I'm sure I didn't do it as well as I might have, as I think about it, but I did it as well as I could. And that's important. Remember to praise in public and punish in private. Once in a while, people are going to have to go to the woodshed because they screw up really bad. Now, a trip to the woodshed is not a good thing. It has been my duty at Black Rose to be the board executioner for some long time. Once in a while, you have to take adverse action against people because they did something really bad. And you got to suspend them, or you got to do one thing or another. It happens. You get a 500-person group, people are going to screw up really bad every once in a while. So somebody's got to be the one to take him out and take him for a walk and go explain, hey, look, you know, this is what you did. Can't have this. Here's what we're going to do to you. Here's when you're welcome back. Let's talk about it. That has to happen. And that's always, always, always got to be done privately. No matter how mad that I get at some individuals on occasion, and both my boy, wherever Lisa went, and Julia could tell you that there are moments, but I keep that private, you know, and when it's in public, that's when you praise people. When they did well, you make sure that other people see you praising them. And when they fuck up, you take them out back and you put them up against the wall and you let them know the error of their ways. You can't, no matter how angry you are or how frustrated you are, you cannot allow yourself to punish someone in public. And that means around anybody else. You just can't do that. As much as they richly deserve that, you can't do that. Trevor.
Isn't there one thing, it mustn't be personal? You've got to address the issue somewhere.
Boy, and that's tough, because I'm one of the human beings, and sometimes it's real personal. You have personally offended me by breathing. It's one of those things that we got to, you're right, we got to try to do that. Make no pretense to being able to fully...
Exactly. It's the whole thing with leaders. You can get along with people that you don't like personally.
Oh, yes.
But you can still work with them to accomplish whatever it is you're trying to accomplish.
That is absolutely correct.
And not sit there and attack them personally.
We do not get to always pick our teams. We play the hand we are dealt. We had people on the LLC committee that I wouldn't have picked. Our second line guys, our committee heads, they pick their teams. They pick some people that I wouldn't have given house room to. Well, okay. You know, I kind of groaned and thought, why on earth did you bring that person in? You know, oh, what a dumb idea. But I cannot say a thing about that because I gave them the authority to do it. And that is the hand that we are being dealt, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to make it work as well as we could. And you just have to do that. You're absolutely right.
Did it work?
In this case, the two individuals in question never even showed up. Not once, ever. You know, and, you know, so told you so.
But you didn't have to say anything because, therefore, you prove your theory by default.
Yes.
You didn't have to attack anybody or say anything.
Yeah.
But what you thought came true.
Yeah, I felt somewhat vindicated privately later.
There's a converse to that as well, especially working with people on a team, and members of that team expected someday to move into further up. That is, you know, if you have a grievance against somebody above you, don't air it in public. You
right.
Come on, I got to, you know, you don't take down the boss in public.
Right, you got to go out. It's the team. You got to act like it in public. The leader's got to provide appropriate support. It's not enough to say, well, look, I want you to go do this. That is not sufficient. You need to make sure you have provided the appropriate resources. And in our community, that's bodies and money. Almost always, it's bodies and money. We need to foster innovation. Let me back up on that one. NCSF was one person and a computer for about a year. And then Susan was sitting in my kitchen, scantily clad one night, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. She had been down and go to some conference. And we were talking, and she's telling me about NCSF. This was several years ago. And I said, that is a good idea. And she said, oh, yeah. And I said, well, what have you got? And boiled down to her, the computer. And I said, well, what do you need? She said, everything. So what we did for a long time, virtually all the staff for NCSF came out of Black Rose. I stood up at a meeting and I said, I need a bunch of volunteers to help with this great national project. And we got about 6-8 people. Said, yeah, I'll help. We ran fundraisers and we got our money and we got our bodies. I wasn't the leader of NCSF. In this case, we provided the necessary resources. You can't go anywhere without resources. The real leader provides the resources. You have to foster innovation and creativity because sometimes those resources are pretty hard to come by. Or the exact way to get things done is not so clear. We need to encourage people. Find a way to solve it. Find the workaround. Find a way to get this done. We need to provide help when it is needed. Big emphasis on the word when it is needed. Identify reasonably qualified people, the best you've got. Give them the task. Make sure they understand it. They get the hell out of their way. Don't bug them until they come to you, and they should know that they can and that they should. So I tell people, don't wait till it's all fucked up to come to me. When you start having a problem that you can't solve, damn well better be on my phone telling me about your problem. But other than that, I won't bug you. You know, I shall assume you are going to deliver. You know, unless you tell me, you cannot. And I have found this to be, in general, I'm obviously being a little simplified here, but in general, a good way to be. Maintain a sense of urgency. That little line came out of the Star Trek Guide to Leadership. I've read a lot of leadership books, and most of them are incredibly dull and boring and confuse leadership and management. We're talking all about leadership stuff here. One of the most interesting books, little paperback, and it's the Star Trek Guide to Leadership, and it's based on an analysis of Star Trek Next Generation episodes to look at the leadership examples that were captured in those episodes. And some of those are really good. It's an excellent little book. And one of the things that they mentioned that's really struck me was this business of maintain a sense of urgency. And if you think about that television program, that was all through it. You didn't ever see people sort of sitting around and sloughing off unless they were on vacation. What the characters portrayed was not a sense of desperation or a sense that things are falling apart, but if it's important to do, it's important to do now. And if it's not worth doing now, it's not that important. I was captivated by that, and it was like, this is very important. Because maintaining a sense of urgency when you are particularly like in an event context, you can't let it fly. You got to check the stuff off because other things will occur to use up available time. And if you postpone things too long, you're going to get yourself all screwed up. maintain a sense of urgency. The good leader develops individuals into effective teams. Help people to grow by giving them a chance to grow. At Black Rose, we use our annual event as our How to Grow New Leaders. For each position, we have a chair and two co-chairs. You have a junior and you have a senior. The senior one is the one that's been there 2 years, and the junior one is there for their first year. And with a few exceptions, we try to rotate that every year. The senior one goes off and does something else where they're going to be the junior one. And the junior one is now the senior one. And we try to move people up. And this has worked fairly well. Now, it's not perfect, because after a while, you get six people that their next position that they're going to take is going to be the event chair. Well, there's only one of them. So six people are in competition for it. Usually a couple of them self-select their way out. But it's still, several aren't going to be able to do it. So, it's not a perfect system. But what it does do, over the several years we've been doing this, it has very definitely allowed us to create a mechanism to train people how to be a leader and how to take command and how to manage a whole lot of money. And this has worked fairly well. Not perfect, but not bad either. I think it's one of the better things we've done. Individuals need to be challenged or they will stagnate. You've got to give them something that's interesting and enough of a challenge. Expect high performance and demand actual contribution. Good enough is something that only comes into play at the very end. For example, our program book for BR99 looked like dog shit. It was awful. And why was it awful? Because of the way they chose to handle the printing. The people in charge putting the program book together were late. They didn't get their job done on time. There was a leadership issue within that particular group of people. They didn't get it done. And because they didn't get it done, it didn't get to the right printer. So then things had to get done on an emergency basis. It cost us more, and we got a thing full of blank pages and loose pages stuck in there. It looked like shit. Really, really bad. That's the point where we can say, okay, it's good enough. But prior to that, that's not an acceptable answer. Prior to that, we want it. It's always going to be, it's going to look really good. And we will work towards the goal, making it as absolutely good as possible. And then you take and adjust for realities when you accept the final product. Foster a focus on deeds, not words. I just don't care about lofty goals and this, that, and the other thing, and wonderful philosophy. What are you doing? Where is it? Show me pieces. Now, that may be sort of draconian, but it gets the stuff done. It makes Tuesday night meetings happen. It makes events happen. Where is it? Communicate appreciation. Good leader cares for and about his people. You've got, these are people. They have needs that are beyond physical. They have emotional needs. And they will do a lot for you if they think you actually care about them. And it doesn't take much. Remember their names. Never miss the opportunity to go up, pat them on the back, and say, as they're working away, how's it going? How we doing? You got what you need? All sorts of little things you can do to indicate that you actually care about this person and their contribution to the team. That goes a really long way. Napoleon said words to the effect that men will die for bits of colored ribbon, something that communicates appreciation for what they did. It isn't the thing you do, for that was Napoleon's context, a bit of colored ribbon to wear on the uniform. It was the fact that you communicated. Recognize their work and acknowledge their achievements. Anytime somebody does something that's really good, make sure that they get touted for it. Help your people feel good about what you're doing. And why is this important, and why will this further our goal? If they feel that they're actually making a contribution that moves the team toward the goal, that they're part of the team then, and that their thing they did was important, That goes a very long way to getting more out of them. There are some other personal characteristics of an effective leader. Leaders got to have initiative. Recognize what needs doing and do it then. I've got a couple of board members over the years that we've had to sort of let go because they didn't recognize a damn thing. They failed at that identify immediate requirements. And they couldn't see anything that needed to get done. So you told them about it. You're here at the meeting. You saw this. You should have seen it. Why the fuck didn't you fix it? Well, I didn't know. Well, I didn't know. It's not a very good answer. That is wholly an unacceptable answer for a leader. That's just not going to work. Initiative is really important. A good leader does not allow either emotions or personal agenda to drive decisions and actions. That's actually really hard because we all have our personal agendas. We all have those things that we think are the important issues and whatnot. I will give you an example from Congress, Ron Dellums. Initially, not my idea of the best member of the House, he was the charge of the House, I think it was the House Armed Services Committee. When I saw him get there, it was like, oh my God, this is going to be a terrible thing for the country. Because he represented an extremely liberal area and had a very senior congressman to be on the Armed Services Committee with this kind of a background, to me was frightening. But then I saw the guy do a really interesting thing. He would take and had personally a very hawkish view. When it was time to just discuss things in committee, he took a very pro-military attitude. But when it was time to vote, he turned to his fellow committee members and said, I hope that you will appreciate why I must now vote against it. The thing he had just been pushing, because when it came right down to it, he clearly separated the difference between his personal agenda and, in this case, his constituents, or in our case, our group. Our members are our constituents. And sometimes you have to do things that you personally don't think are what you, I mean, they're not personally beneficial to you. They may be actually contrary to what you want to do, but it is where the group needs to go, and you got to do it because that's what has to happen, even though it is not to your personal benefit or not your personal way of liking. And that's just one of those things, and you got to do that. Dellums was an absolutely great example of that. And for a person that otherwise I didn't much care for, I was really, really inspired, if you will. I don't get inspired by much. And I saw that, it was that damn. I wish I could be like that. Judgment. You've got to make good judgment. That's sound and reasonable decisions, because as a leader, you're going to make decisions all the time. Little decisions at the meeting, something is going wrong, something's not where it's supposed to be, we got to make a decision to do something. You've got to develop a reputation, if you will, of making sound and reasonable decisions. That is mostly, in my experience, a matter of coming up with criteria. What criteria will I use to make the decision? I spend a lot of time with my son, 17, and over the last, maybe 4 or 5 years, we go to dinner. Just him and I every Tuesday night. This is our just private time between the two of us. We've done that since he was about 5. And we talk about stuff. We talk a lot about philosophy. Great deal about that. And one of the things that we spoke about many times was how do you make a decision? And we talked a lot about, over the years, about how do I define the criteria that I need to apply to the circumstances in order to make an appropriate decision. And if that doesn't resonate with you, then you need to focus on it. Because if you approach decision-making like that, you will generally make better decisions. They are more likely to be ultimately the correct decision. So decision-making is principally what are the circumstances, what has to be decided, and what criteria will I apply to these circumstances to make the proper decision. And we need to foster that, because our decisions affect many people. And oftentimes, they are spur of the moment things that have to happen, because they just have to get decided. And we have to have the track record as leaders, effective leaders, of generally making the right decision. We got to be right more than we're wrong. Not that we can't be wrong occasionally, because we will be, but you got to be right most of the time.
One thing that I thought about last year when we had our board retreat, one of the things that I said, the criteria that I would use to make decisions, I said I will base all my decisions on two things. The first is what I perceive to be the truth in the situation, and the other is what I think is going to be the best for the organization.
Sure.
And if you keep that in focus and eliminate all the ego and personality, then you're focused and you're directed.
I have no fault with that at all. But we got to have criteria. Got to have criteria. Or you are working on emotions and politics and so forth. Integrity. If the troops believe that you lack integrity, they will not follow you for long. That's for sure. You be honest in your handling of materials, issues, and the guidance that you give others. Guidance is just as important as the handling of materials and money and so forth. When you talk to somebody and you give them advice, be sure you give them good advice. Not just whatever it is you think, you know, will just get rid of them. Because if you're blowing them off, that's lacking in integrity, just as much as if you stole from them. Because they're going to listen to what you say to some extent, or they would have come ask you to begin with. So your advice, your counsel, whatever it is, has to be just as important as money. Accept the responsibility for the bad decisions that you have made. We will all make bad decisions on occasion. And what you need to do is to say, hey, you know, I thought I was right. I did what I thought was the right thing to do. It turned out to be wrong. God damn, I'm sorry. What do you want me to do? And make it right. I think it is way wrong to follow what I see as common guidance today that says never apologize. That shows weakness. That's such crap. Absolute garbage. Accept responsibility for what you have done, right or wrong. Demeanor. You have to maintain a friendly, approachable, positive, upbeat attitude even when you have more on your plate than you could possibly deal with. And that can be a real challenge. But you got to do it. Because if you look like a person amidst chaos, then other people will either assume the situation is hopeless, or your sense of chaos and confusion will be infectious to them. You must not allow that. You've got to take, and in the immediate term, maintain that upbeat and friendly and approachable demeanor, and then try and get rid of some of the stuff off your plate. As Juliet and my boy know, I'm not always the very best at that, but it's something you've got to do. Be very reluctant to share your stress. This is something that personally I have a hard time with. Because for whatever reason, personality-wise, I am too willing sometimes to answer a person's question. How do you feel? Well, I'll tell them how I feel. I feel like shit. Well, that's not smart. It really isn't. That's not a good leadership characteristic. But it's very honest.
Does that mean you should lie? Typically in D.C., it's like, oh, everything's fine. You know how this area is. It's
Yeah. Wild.
It's, hi, how are you? Nice to see you. It's like, you know, that. And, you know, it's just like,
I think that's too far.
It's hard to express how you feel without coming across as whining and such. And yet at the same time, you don't want to lie to people and say, everything's great.
And I don't want to lie to them, but I believe that absolute truth. My former wife is involved with this cult called radical honesty.
And the title
and radical honesty is merely a means of legitimizing being rude. It's institutionalized rudeness. And she is rudely honest all the time, which, you know, you want to reach out like, I don't want to hear that shit, you know. So I think that there is a gray area in between being radically honest with somebody and not sharing more of your stress and your feelings than you need to, because too much is not good.
Can you say, I don't want to talk about it right now, radically honest about it.
Sure, you can do that. Whatever works for you. But don't tell people, oh my God, it's going to fall apart. I feel like, but I'm not going to talk to them.
But Jack,
don't do that.
Don't you have to have somebody that, you know, after you hold your tongue and you're prim and proper and you get the job done, that you go close the door into the back room and then blow up?
The person just walked in over there. Yeah. Dwight vent to you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And they're the reason that you're having this medical problem right now.
Yeah.
You need to finish your lecture.
My boy and my girl, they get vented to a lot in private, and I've been known to stomp my feet and do all sorts of stuff because that's in private. But yes, you do have to have, I believe. It's how I survive. It's how why I'm not, you know, indicted for homicide, you know? Okay. Sense of service. Your primary purpose in doing anything should be the betterment of the group. Everything we do in our role as the leader, just as Bob alluded to just a little earlier, is what is going to move the group forward. And it's betterment for the group. That is why we do what we do. And if we're there in a leadership capacity with some other agenda, then we're there for the wrong reason. And that's not good for the group. The members of your group are your customers, and the customer comes first. I mean, the customers are always absolutely right. Sometimes members will want to do something that is actually very bad for the group because they don't understand the ramifications. They haven't thought it out. Our job is that we got to think it out, and we have to look at the actual realities. For example, at Black Rose, many of our members want us to buy, so we got some money now, they want us to buy a building and have a home of our own. I think this is the stupidest idea I've ever heard of, and I can show you on paper financially why this is really dumb. We will go from a group, you know, that's got more than $100,000 in the bank to a group that's got nothing. And as we look around with the other groups losing their places and whatnot, this is not the time to go buy a place of our own. Well, okay, they're reacting, they're basing their desires on emotions. They mostly would like to have a place of our own. Or their own personal little fantasies about they have their own place to go take people at night and so forth and so on. But as a leader, I have to work on physical realities. And so the customer comes first. It doesn't mean the customer is always right. And sometimes we have to explain to the customer why they're wrong and why that's not where we're going to go. Is that not a good idea? Fiduciary responsibility to the group comes first. Willingness to compromise. It would be a very true statement to suggest or to say that I have generally a pretty clear idea how I think it ought to be done. I do not waffle on this. I did not become a staff sergeant of Marines by being indecisive. However, I have mellowed slightly. My hair got longer, and I mellowed a little bit. And now I'm willing to recognize that there might possibly be more than one way to solve a problem. And in fact, I have mellowed to such an extent that I generally take the view that is it moving the ball down the field? I think, and any right-thinking person would realize it should go down the right side of the field. However, you wish to go down the left side, which is silly and inefficient. But is it moving it down the field? And if the answer is yes, then by all means, if that's what you want to do, go ahead. That took me a long time to accept that, and I sometimes have to grit my teeth. But it is the right way to look at it. Is it moving the ball in the direction the ball's got to go in? If the answer is yes, it's good enough. Even if it's not the way that you would do it. When it's my turn to carry the ball, then I shall show you how it should be done. The obvious way. When it's your turn, as long as you go in the right direction, that's good enough. Okay, in summary, the BDSM leather, fetish, whatever the hell we want to call our community.
We can get many names if we got it wrong. New one.
Oh my goodness. The us. Our community. We need leaders. As we get bigger and we attract more attention from the outside and we have more things we're doing, we need leaders who are living symbols, who walk the talk. Your actions should reflect what you preach. You got to do it. You got to make it happen. And who are buck stoppers that are willing to make the tough decisions, popular or unpopular, and do what is sometimes unpleasant, but necessary. You got to own up to it. Even if it's not going to make you popular, you just got to freaking do it. Who are visionary, who know where we are going, and why are we going there, and how we will get there. And lastly, who are team builders, who will unite our community in pursuit of some common cause. These things, I believe, are really, really important. I hope that this has been of some value. Because a member has made a suggestion, that does not mean that it's a good suggestion. or that it's a practical suggestion.
Have they laid out a plan or some analysis that shows why that's a good suggestion? Or are they merely convinced of its merit? Because apparently what that person has not done is convince anybody else that that's a good plan and one worthy of following. Let me give you an analogy. At Black Rose, we have special interest groups. Special interest groups almost always are the product of somebody's good idea. We should have a bondage group. We should have a dominance submissive group. And we say, yeah, fine. And when will your first meeting be? But we do not empower them at that stage. Because that, we tried that. And that doesn't work. What we make them do is they say, well, I want to start a bondage group. Okay, wonderful. Put down on paper a business plan. And they look at you like, a what? I said, a business plan. Very simple, one or two pages. I want to know, who are you going to serve? And serve them what? What will this special interest group do? What's your purpose? What's your goal? And how will you attract members? And where will you hold your meetings? And you've got to show me at least six people. Bodies. I want to see bodies. I think this is a good idea. And we have a series of things that we make them do. And you put it down, it fits on page or two. And we have found that when we make them do that, only one of those six has failed. Previously, most of them didn't make it. But by making them take and do a little bit of a business plan, many of them back off. They realized their idea really wasn't such a good idea. And there really wasn't a constituency that wanted this. Or we could see that really what they wanted to do was they wanted to create a meat market to themselves. Mm-hmm. And there was, various different reasons. And we were able to make a decision to call a halt to it. But by forcing them into having to do more than tell me your good idea, but make this good idea into some sort of document that can be examined and force you to think about it, that made a big difference in the long-term success. Because we didn't have a bunch of half-assed ideas. It made it easier for them to set up. I believe that in a perfect world, you would be able to, as a group leader, manage your affairs such that your personal life and your obligations to your organization were neatly in harmony, and one did not overlap the other. I am not personally aware anyone that can do that. And I see most organizational leaders sacrifice, to some extent, their personal life for the good of their organization, at least to some extent. Is this ideal? No. But I think we are just not perfect when it comes to our abilities to be that order. I'm not. My obligations to the various offices that I hold, do they interfere with my life?
Yeah.
Next question.
You don't have to answer that, Jack.
Trevor.
You're kind of saying we should be committed to the commitments we make.
And that's a very good way of phrasing it, Trevor. Thank you. We should be committed to the commitments we make. And if you take it on and you say, yes, I'll do it, then by God, you have to get it done. And if it's uncomfortable, then remember that next time. That would seem reasonable.
Two observations would both come to. I think any good leader is also planning for and developing his successors.
Oh, sure.
No one is indispensable, and the last thing you want is for a leader to disappear by accident.
Right.
And have no one who is capable and prepared to step into that position. Relating with that is, once you've developed your successors, that's a good sense to graciously step aside.
You're quite correct. This has been something that, for me, has been quite the issue. I stepped off the Black Rose Board a couple of years ago because I felt I was in that position. That I've been there 8 years, it was enough, and we had other good people. Then we had somebody that couldn't fill out their term, so the board asked me would I come and fill out their term.
And one thing led to another, and I served a couple more terms. But I do not plan to run again this year. We elect our board every year. I do not plan to run again this year because of just what you're saying. I believe I have done a good job at helping prepare other people to take and be good leaders. We do, we can be a good board. People get stuff done. And sometimes it means spending to 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning after a board meeting in my office explaining to a individual board member or one of several that have done that why things happened the way they did at the meeting. We do our board meetings at my office because I have a large conference room and it's convenient. They'll say, can I stay and talk with you for a while? And I've learned the only acceptable answer is yes. Because they want to understand why. You know, why did they lose, you know, on a vote? Or why did something happen? Or why, whatever. And you've got to take the time to explain the why. Because they got to understand how the group works and how the community works and all the rest of that, or they can't do the job. So how to prepare people to take over, that was sort of my little contribution to that, was to take the time to explain why, or whatever needed to be explained. But I wholly concur. I mean, if our same group were to run again, I would have every confidence that they would do an absolutely superb job, and I could go sit and actually begin to play again. I could bring toy bags to things instead of my briefcase.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a wonderful change.
One of the very difficult things in developing new leaders is when you get new people involved with your organization and they come up with these great new ideas that you know have been tried before and failed terribly. And you don't want to discourage them, and yet at the same time, you want them to understand there's a history here. And one of the ways of handling that type of thing, two things. One is that if someone wants to do something that has failed before, find out from them, what will make it succeed this time? And don't accept the answer, well, it didn't work then, but it'll work now. That's just not enough. But another thing would be, very often when someone comes up with a thought, write it out, you know, sort of make an outline of what you think can happen or how to do it and so forth. And sometimes you'll get a very good set of ideas that will possibly work out, and sometimes the person, when really starting to write the detail, realizes that, gee, I sort of don't really have an idea here after all.